Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
So, as you know, I am a particular interest in AI. So, I have been using assistants in my home for quite some time. And Amazon has announced a new version of Alexa, which goes that little bit further, takes a larger step towards the concept of her, in that these generational AI models that we've been using in our homes will now be able to speak to us from devices, and we'll have conversations with our clocks. And we're going down a very interesting rabbit hole. You might have also seen a video about two AI chatbots speaking to each other and then switching to a language that isn't English to be able to speak with each other more efficiently. It got a lot of traction on the internet because, you know, it's very sci-fi. We'll dig into all of this with Dr. Brian McNamee, who's our guest. He is an associate professor at the School of Computer Science at UCD and has a PhD in AI, works a lot with these large language models and fine-tuning these models to get better outputs. Brian, welcome to the program. Before we start, maybe you might take yourself back to the point at which ChatGPT-3 was released. And I've asked a number of different researchers about this, and I wanted to know, that moment for you, was it Aya or was it Holy God?
Thanks very much. And I got to hold my hands up and say it was a Holy God moment.
Yeah, but everyone has said that. Every single researcher I've spoken said that, yeah.
That's good. And I think the thing that really sort of impressed me and sort of blew me away a little bit was the way that you could give an instruction to ChatGPT and it could pick up on the nuances of the instruction. So we have been doing work for a long time on doing things like building conversational systems to allow people to talk to databases. And we were doing an awful lot of work to try and figure out, well, what's the question that you're actually asking and what's the data table that you want to look at? And we had lots of bespoke pieces to figure those things out. And all of a sudden you could say, write me a movie script in the style of Seinfeld about Jimmy and Bob ordering their dinner. And ChatGPT was able to pull out the individual components of that request and respond to it in an appropriate way. So that's the thing that really blew me away.
Yeah, I mean, it did to me. And I suppose it started with, that's why I ended up get started with AI, because I just said, this is a complete shift of the sands underneath our feet. So we're now in the space of just 2 short years, it's kind of incredible, at a stage where we have agents available to have live, real-time, natural conversations in different tones with accents and stresses on different words, and fully fluid conversations in real time, which is really crazy. But it brings up a lot of questions about language and how we interact with things and how we get better at using these interfaces and how we get better outputs from them. And I guess the first question I wanted to ask you is, what is the state of play at the moment when it comes to language and using these particular models? Where are we?
So I think we're at a real kind of interesting point where we're at an inflection point where we're in that place now where you can have those very fluid conversations with chatbots, and it can be quite interesting and it can be fun, and you can ask them questions and they give you information. The thing that's shifting right now is that we're moving now into instructing those AI agents or AI systems to go and take action for us. So, and that's referred to as the idea of an AI agent. So where we talked about, you know, that thing that really blew me away with ChatGPT was its ability to take instruction to generate text or generate images later on. Now what we're seeing is people connecting that up to generate actual action. And you mentioned the new iteration of Alexa that's come along. That's the big thing that's being trumpeted there. So taking your, you know, request where you might be going to visit a city like London and saying, give me a nice itinerary for my day in London, and going a step further than just generating that itinerary to saying, now book me those tickets, book me that good restaurant, give me the show in the theater, and line all those events up. So I think that's the big moment that we're at now, where people are trying to connect that action into that conversation.
Yeah, and I think Amazon had positioned themselves so well for this particular next step. Because if you've been reading the internet over the last couple of months, everyone's been talking about this idea of agentic AI, where the AI, and as you say, doesn't just hear and listen to you, but it can actually go off and perform tasks for you. And so far, the demonstrations by the big companies are quite underwhelming. Their first steps, if you're a technologist, they're amazing. But if you're not, you're kind of going, I'm waiting forever just for it to click one web page. But Amazon had already linked in so many different services into its API because it has this enormous shopping network. But of course, it also has an undercore of, you know, web services, AI, and a big AI layer, and consumer tech. And it's managed in this new product to be able to pull all of those things together. And so you can now say, Alexa, call me an Uber, and it knows who you are. It does that in the app for you, and it will call an Uber. And so you know, you don't have to take out your phone. And I was talking about this a long time ago, like this idea of no friction, but it brings up a number of different questions and a number of different problems. If we have agentic AI acting on behalf of a person, and you have an agentic AI acting on behalf of an organization, then there's a couple of areas where this could be really, really tricky. I mean, first off, we're nearly at that phase, right, where I'm going to be asking my Alexa to book me a restaurant. And if it doesn't have a website, it could probably ring them up, book, speak to a server, and the server would then tell them, you know, about the restaurant and so on. But that server could also be an AI, right? So no humans would be involved in the, except to say, kind of have a table and the other person say yes, and all the details aren't that in between, right?
So that idea isn't that far away, which is really interesting, because like just a few years ago that would have seemed like complete science fiction, and all of a sudden we're getting very close to it. The thing we're seeing, and you mentioned a couple of the keywords there, I think, is this progression through the different layers and levels that people are going to put this automation in terms of AI agents. So APIs being the key one, and like you say, Amazon were really well placed to do this. So that's where services like Uber, like OpenTable and so on, have basically a computer interface that allows a computer talk to their systems and do a search, book a table and so on. And that makes it quite straightforward. The next level up that we see, and like you say, some of the demos are a little underwhelming of this, is where we see an AI agent essentially using the internet like we would. And you can sit there, it's kind of spooky and kind of impressive to see the cursor moving around and things being typed into boxes. That's a little hard, that's a harder problem. And things aren't quite as far along the road as that just yet. And then the last layer, like you say, of having your AI agent basically taking the role of a person and phoning up the restaurant and saying, you know, what tables do you have? And could you give me something not too close to the band? Those things that we're kind of along that line. And I think what we'll see is as the API version of that coming first, and the API version of that probably being reasonably reliable, and starting to see key things like an Uber coming into place and being quite mainstream, because some of those things are pretty easy. So it's, yeah, I want that taxi now, I want it where I am.
There's subtlety there. No, but obviously there are more complicated versions of that. But the quick wins are Alexa has done, or Amazon have done, a great job of picking a lot of things that just take 5 minutes, but you now don't need to do that. And of course, it also remembers your history, and security saves that so that it can have an idea of who you are. And this is, you know, we talked about this a number of years back on the program, that you will have an AI assistant who knows you better than you do. So you can say, buy me some toilet roll, and it won't just go and buy a toilet roll. It will go and look for the toilet roll that you like, which is the eco-friendly toilet roll that is on sale at the moment on a particular shop, and it will add that. And so that sort of level of automation is problematic in certain fields. And I wanted to talk to you about this and how we might avoid or code for this. So the two fields that I've spoken about recently with clients and with other colleagues, the first one is HR. So there's an app called Lazy Apply, and Lazy Apply will allow you to put in your CV, put in your cover letter, and then press go, and it will then go to LinkedIn, and it will find any job that you are in any way remotely suitable for, and it will apply for you, shaping the letter and your CV to the particular requirements of that job, right? So that sounds great. If you're someone looking for a job and you want to have lots of options in front of you, it's a nightmare for HR. And I had a keynote with DocuSign, who's a huge, big HR team across the world. And they said, what are we going to do here? Because the EU AI Act says you can't use AI to screen these. So at the moment, all HR people are getting loads more CVs, but they have to screen, them. So if we have AI screening AI CVs, which we'll have to do shortly, who misses out there in the loop? And I imagine it's the people in the fringes, in the outliers, the Elizabeth Holmeses or Steve Jobs of the world, right? So how do we not make everything gray and middle when we have agents speaking to agents?
I think this is the big problem, and you'll have heard the phrase AI slop, and how we're living in a world basically that's being deluged with this, and the Lazy Apply is a great example of that. We were just actually talking about that this week in UCD, of how our UCD HR is facing exactly that problem right now, and thinking about, well, how are we going to deal with that, and how are we going to deal with that in a pretty regulated HR environment where we have to read things, we have to screen things. I think the two big parts of that are going to be, I think there's going to be a huge pushback against it. I think we'll probably move into that world where we have our AI applicants being screened by our AI screeners. And like you say, we're going to end up in that weird place in the middle. I think a little like we've seen in, let's say, in education and in assessment in education, we've gone through this in the last couple of years. Things like the oral exam have come back up. So I think things like the screening interview is going to become a big thing, so that there'll be a conversation, and a conversation with a real person to jump in the middle.
My worry is about the people who get pre-screened out because they can't use AI well enough, even though their job has nothing to do with AI, right?
Yeah, no, completely. And I think I think how we shift through that is going to be really interesting to see. You know, it'll take a little bit of time for those wheels to turn to get to the point where we're seeing that impact, and I guess seeing then a backlash or a response to that impact, because we're already seeing that. And again, I guess to go back to the educational conversation, we're having that conversation now about, you know, students are using AI, and the students who are better resourced are using the better AIs to not get noticed that they're using AI. And that's, I think, a real challenge that we're going to have. That, you know, there's that famous quote that's been trotted out by lots of people, that AI won't take your job. Someone who uses AI better than you will take your job.
Yeah. And so the other area that is problematic is funding proposals for research, right? So I just got off the phone with a funder, and I said, I was showing them DeepSeek, Deep Research by OpenAI. Mm-hmm. And I've been actually talking to other Irish researchers, a lot of them who are on this program, said, give me a research question and give me 15 minutes. And I've sent it back to them. Now, some people said, yeah, this is okay. You know, I wouldn't put it in a grant. Other people have been blown away by the results. So, you know, maybe it's my asking of the question or lack of understanding of the domain, but this is a one shot, you know, one question into DeepSeek, Deep Research, ask a few questions and get a response back. And what I get in some of these is really, really in-depth, lots of citations, so that it really looks like an in-depth, well-thought-out scientific research paper. And the links are real. They're not, you know, so far, we haven't seen any hallucinated links. But funders are going to get these applications in that may have been produced in 15 minutes, and they won't be able to know whether or not. I mean, obviously you've got to have a reviewer of a paper kind of saying we should fund this, we shouldn't fund that, but they don't have time to try and figure out, is this an AI generated application or not? And if it is that a bad thing? Like, it's how do we deal with that? Because that actually you get funded by funding bodies to do papers. You're now competing with someone who can come up with a good question and create a good prompt through prompt engineering, and perhaps have a better proposal than you because that's what happens.
Yeah, and I think there's two really interesting things happening there. Is one, I think there was a moment probably a year or so ago where people were sort of putting in rules around, although we're not going to allow any AI generated content in these processes, and you've got to sign your declaration. I think two interesting things happening there are, one, it's just really hard to check and to check reliably. And second, that those AI tools now are becoming so interweaved in all the tools that we use. So if you use Google Docs to write your documents, there's constantly a little AI button saying, I'll help you with that. I'll finish this off for you. So that notion of sort of banning the use of AI is becoming tricky around that. So I think that's led to people sort of rolling back. on those kinds of bans. I think the other interesting thing, though, is, and the slight positive that could come out of this, is looking at those processes like applying for grants and looking at, well, what's the core really important parts of this? So I guess in our typical grant proposal, maybe we write 50 pages. Maybe there's only actually one or two pages of that that are really important, because the other 50 pages, if everybody uses AI, they're all going to be as good as each other. It'll all be that gray kind of middle thing. So is there a version of this that we could use the AI moment kind of to, I guess, make that process more efficient and really hone in on what's the key thing, what's the big research idea? What is it that you're going to do with this? What's going to get people excited? What potentially has impact? But
and I guess your track record now is going to be much more important. What have you actually done? Because what you say you're going to do, who knows if you can do it, but what you've actually done and what your affiliations are and where you studied, that becomes a really big deal now. So it's good. I mean, it's just a really, really interesting field. I wanted to very quickly finish off talking about gibberish mode, because I thought it was an interesting one. These two AI bots online were it was a part of a hackathon, so it's not a real feature. But the idea was, if you have two AIs speaking to each other, why on earth would they speak in English? And so they switched to a sort of a modem mode where they could transfer information much, much quicker. And I think that's a great idea in theory. But if we don't know what agents are saying to each other and they're saying it on our behalf, that, you know, gets down to a very scary place, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned the movie Her at the beginning, and I guess there's that moment in Her where the character realizes his agent has been out talking to other people, and has this shock revelation. And I think the gibberling thing is kind of interesting. It's essentially still the English text and being translated into this very sort of compressed representation and then sent back and forth. I think the language matters less than the idea of letting our agents out to talk to each other and act on our behalf. And I think we're going to see a slew of bad AI stories where people all of a sudden have ordered, 900 toilet rolls by mistake because their agent went out and did that, or restaurants flooded with AI bookings from people in the wrong city and things like that.
And I think the products and services that are most in demand are going to really struggle with those. The niche or smaller, we're only releasing a small batch of this. It's going to be really, really difficult now to market to this world. Hmm. I have to leave it there, but it's a fascinating subject. And thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Brian McNamee from the School of Computer Science at UCT.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.